And Harry Shearer is going to be coming up here. Do we have Harry yet? I don't actually see Harry Shearer on my... What are you doing there, Lyle Anderson? Are you calling randomly? This is the wrong part of the show to be calling randomly. We need Harry Shearer. It's got to be specific. You got him? Is he there? Okay. Well, just come on. Liven up yourself. Harry Shearer is joining us from New York City. He's got a brilliant new thing that he's doing now. It's called Nixon is the One, but actually Harry Shearer is the One, and he's with us right now. Harry, are you there?
I am here.
How are you?
I'm taking it easy on the Albanians, otherwise I'm fine.
Yeah, you got to go light on that.
Yeah.
I think the Albanians are actually the same thing as Greeks, though, aren't they, really?
Well, I think they're... You could fight a war over that, but why bother?
why start another war over
it?
You know, it's a ridiculous
thing. We got plenty.
We got plenty. Plenty of things going on right now. And by the way, are you doing your holiday tour now with the sing-alongs? And...
Yes. My and Judith Owen's holiday tour, which is now called Christmas Without Tears. we did our first show last night in New York City, amazing show, and it... We'll be going to L.A. next week and then to San Francisco on the 16th at a club called The Addition with a whole bunch of wonderful San Francisco artists. Each city we do the tour in, because we gather our friends and accomplices in the worlds of comedy and music from the locality. So it's Matthew Bouvier, Will Durst, Amy Engelhart, Julia Fordham, Josh Kornbluth, wonderful monologist, Donya Oxford, a killer stride and a boogie-woogie piano player, and a couple of special guests. And it's Tuesday, December 16th, and it's always for charity. This time it's for the Mental Health Association of San Francisco.
And will there be anything for our friends who celebrate Hanukkah?
I usually do Jill Sobule's wonderful and very heartfelt ditty on the subject, which is called Jesus Was a Dreidel Spinner.
Okay. Well, there's some tears there, I guess.
Plenty of tears there.
I got some tears there. Nixon is the One. This is truly brilliant.
Well, thank you.
How did you get into the Nixon? Now, I read somewhere that you said that a lot of stuff has been done about Nixon, obviously, over the years, and it's mostly cruel, spirited, or what have you.
Well, it's basically Nixon as a stick figure,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
And I did some of that in my youth, of course, as well. but it occurred to me we have this incredibly unique gift of virtually every waking spoken word of his for 5.5 years preserved on tape. And he's such a peculiar character that why bother with making stuff up when you have the real thing?
Yeah, he is quite amazing.
Yeah, he's a direct gift from the comedy gods. So I took some of the more bizarre, amusing, strange conversations that are on tape in the White House. And just basically, with a wonderful cast of cronies, Nixonian cronies, did them verbatim. And we were listening to the tapes, so we performed not only word for word, but exactly as they were spoken in the White House.
Nuanced.
The rhythms, the melody, the pauses, the people jumping over each other.
Yeah.
And shot it as if he had hidden not just microphones in the White House, but also cameras to give it that extra spooky effect.
Yeah, you got the nuance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Well, the nuance, the old aunts, all the aunts.
All the aunts are in there, yeah. And it was his idea, wasn't it, to tape everything?
Yeah. Well, you know, Johnson and Kennedy had taped conversations as well.
Yeah.
The difference was they had a record button. Nixon was such a technophobe that they didn't trust him to be able to operate a record button. So they devised a system where as the minute that somebody spoke in the rooms that were self-bugged, the tape started rolling.
It was voice activated.
Yeah. And that's why we have this unique gift.
Yeah.
Because of Nixon's physical awkwardness with the technical stuff.
Yeah, and there is that wonderful bit that you have with him actually picking up the phone and trying to figure out how it gets taped.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Where the button worked.
Yeah.
You know, he was physically awkward both with other people, a very unlikely person to go into politics because he didn't like to be with strangers.
Right.
And you'd think that would be sort of a basic skill set for the occupation. and awkward as well with technical stuff.
Yes. He was practically Jewish in his technology, I would say.
You know, you could say that.
Yes.
Jesus did.
Yeah, it's we're not known for our technical ability, although we have it in spurts.
Yeah. Spurts are the best place to keep it, by the way.
Spurt is a good thing. Yeah, that's an amazing scene. And I also love the one with Henry Kissinger sucking up to him after that speech.
Well, there are about 100 tapes that we went through of Kissinger being world-class obsequious to Nixon. That was the best speech you've ever given. That was the best press conference. Yeah. No, not like before. This was the best. And you just realized that this was Kissinger's way of dealing with the fairly uncomfortable fact that he was two things that Nixon hated, a Jew and a Harvard professor. And so to sort of mollify all of that, he just spread on the obsequiousness with a trowel, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
If not an air gun.
Yes. And do you know what that speech was, that particular one?
No, it was a speech about the some stage of the Vietnamese peace plan that Nixon unveiled
right.
to our surprise, but it was just part of that that parade of speeches about Vietnam.
Yeah.
But Kissinger, brilliant guy, still with us, of course. Nixon, very intelligent guy. Using each other, Nixon wanted Kissinger around because he wanted somebody that he thought was as smart as he was to bounce stuff off. And Kissinger, of course, viewed Nixon as his avenue to access to power.
Sure.
I saw Kissinger a couple of years ago, and he at an event which was celebrating Nixon's birth, and Kissinger gave this speech, the thrust of which was Nixon was such a great president because he let me run things.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some truth to that. Cheney will give such a speech someday, I think.
Yeah, if somebody can put the fridge magnets in the right order for...
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
We have a little clip here, is it all right if I play this? I don't have clearance from you to do this, but it's just...
I hereby give you clearance.
Okay. It's with the milk producers, because we are in Wisconsin, it is the dairy state, and one of these guys probably was from Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm sure, at least one.
Yeah.
There was a little scandal, mini scandal, in the early Nixon administration about, this is going to sound quaint, but improper campaign contributions from the dairy industry. And so a bunch of dairy lobbyists are in the White House, and I was expecting them to be, when I first listened to this tape, to be talking about the scandal and how to contain it.
Right.
And instead you hear this.
Yeah, goes quite differently.
I don't know what can be done about it, but the medical profession don't know much about cholesterol. You're being more cooperative, talking and so forth. But, you know, you can fix a glass of milk and have a heart attack. I can think of a lot of things that give you a heart attack, and a lot sooner, too. But, incidentally, I do drink a lot of milk. But what's the medical profession doing in this respect? I mean, there's cholesterol that goes up and down. I mean, they say no eggs, no milk.
Now.
They don't know.
Yes.
Cholesterol, as you know, is related to stress. It's related to you'll have a test made 1 week and be above normal and go back next week be below. Maybe you were drinking the thing that others drink here. But not to get into your business, but in your promotion. Everybody's going for gimmicks these days.
Yes, sir.
Take sleep inducers. An article in, a couple months ago in the Reader's Digest about with regard to sleeping pills, enormous use of them. Now, almost any person who really studies sleep will tell you, probably, that lacking a pill, which has side effects, best thing you can do is milk, just anything at all, just a glass of milk. Now, you don't have to talk with it or anything. It could be warm, it could be tepid, it could be cold. But it has a certain soothing effect, you see. Now, you get people started on that.
Well, that's
my marketing picture.
It didn't help sleep yesterday.
I already got that. Look, but let me tell you that the sleep problem is an American psychosis at the moment. In all advanced societies, over 50% of the American people who were adults at the time take some form of sedative. Now, you can go to work all the time. But sometimes you just got so many problems, you're not going to sleep. But that's psychological, too. You get people thinking that a glass of milk is going to make them sleep, and it'll do well as a sleeping pill. It's all in the head.
Harry Shearer is the one.
You have to add it to him. It is all in the head.
Yeah, it is all in the head, obviously. Yeah. American Psychosis. I love him speaking about the American Psychosis.
Yeah. All advanced societies, probably.
Yeah. I wish you would have spoke more on it. Yeah. Are there any tapes where he speaks more on the American Psychosis?
I think I'll do some research on that and get back to you.
this is all for the milk producers. So apparently he never mentioned the fact about this milk contribution problem.
No. He totally just – and these guys are just sitting there, you know, stunned, silent.
Yeah.
Well, he becomes Professor Milk, you know, on the subject.
Yeah. And we should point out that was you speaking.
Yes, it was.
Yes. I mean, you like trans-channeled him or something. It's scary. But you have the unintended consequence of making him sound sort of likable.
Well,
are you worried about that?
It keeps me up nights. Yeah. Yeah.
Quite amazing.
You know, the thing is, as I say, when I was a kid and he was president, I was making fun of him, satirical fun. Yeah. This is a very different kind of project.
Certainly,
He loves to talk, obviously, as you could hear from that clip, and to just sort of inhabit that creature that talks like that, you have to get somehow closer to him as an actor does.
Yeah.
Than if you're just sort of sending pot shots from a distance. So I realized, for example, I grew up in Southern California. He grew up in Southern California. Mm-hmm. He had this burning resentment for the people that he imagined, you know, back east were getting all the privileges, going all the good schools, and making all the connections, and getting all the good jobs. Well, for God's sake, he got to be president of the United States, and he still felt that way, you know. Mm-hmm. So I understood a little bit of it, but I just enough to realize his resentment turned into an internal volcano, the molten nature of which I think propelled his ambition, because as I said, he didn't have really the skill set to be in politics. He didn't have a winning smile, for example.
Yeah. You know? Now you must have gone through a lot of these tapes. Were there things that absolutely surprised you or astounded you or that you didn't know about that turned up?
There were no dark hidden secrets. I think the thing that really surprised me most, there's a tape at the end of his presidency. It's the last tape in our show, in our series. And it's the 8 minutes before he makes his resignation speech. And he walks into the Oval Office. And this had been videotaped and been going around for years as a bootleg VHS. And I played it for friends and memorized it long since. And it's just, he comes into the Oval Office. He's about to experience the greatest humiliation anybody can possibly experience, having been forced out, having to resign on national television. And what does he do? He doesn't sit there quietly. He doesn't examine his speech. He starts making bad jokes with the crew. Mm-hmm. Just really lame, banal small talk. And it always struck me as just sort of bizarre and an improbable choice to make. And when we were rehearsing the show, I got wind of the last words that he spoke after his speech was over, which was not on the tape. But a person who worked on his staff shared these last words. He finishes resigning. He picks up his papers. He starts to walk out of the Oval Office, and he says to the crew, "Have a Merry Christmas, fellas," and it's August 8th. And I realized what he's doing in that scene. He's already beginning his campaign for rehabilitation of his reputation. In his mind, that crew was going to go out of that office and say to their friends and family that night, well, he wasn't upset. He wasn't angry. He wasn't he was a nice guy. He was joking around. He even wished us a Merry Christmas on August 8th.
Yeah, on August 8th. That's a little weird.
Yeah.
Slightly, but no more weird than anything else, really, that comes out of it.
You know, but I mean, August 8th,
yeah.
We should just be grateful that the decorations still aren't going up that early.
Yeah, yeah. Almost.
Close, yeah.
Oh, boy. It's really, it's unbelievable. Now, and you have plans. By the way, if you want to see Nixon's The One, you go to YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's free for everybody on YouTube.
Yeah, which is rather amazing, too.
Yeah.
And is it a possible theatrical release for this? I'd love to. You look great, by the way.
As Nixon?
Yes.
Yes. No, I had a wonderful makeup person who we spent a summer working on that makeup. And got pretty darn good. Because the point was to have makeup which made me look like him. But also, I could act through it. It wasn't just a mask. It wasn't just putting on a static mask. So
you didn't want to do a Mrs. Doubtfire.
No. But the categories, I have no idea. No plans.
Yeah. Any other presidents in mind that you'd like to do?
Only one's the tape.
They still do that, you think? That probably no longer exists, that function, in the White House.
You know, we saw recently there was a release of some of Reagan's phone calls. He taped some phone calls with foreign leaders, which surprised, I think, almost everybody. But I don't think we'll ever get, you know, Reagan had a record button. I don't think we'll ever get, again, that just unending stream of everything uttered in the Oval Office. I think that's a one-off.
Yeah. Well, it's absolutely brilliant, and
Thank you. You
are to be commended.
Thank you.
And you are to be watched. And you are to be revered, Harry Scherer.
Well, thank you. I bow to your reverence.
Harry Scherer, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Nixon's the one. Check it out. It's unbelievable. Thanks a lot, Harry. Appreciate
it. Thank you,
Mike. Nice to talk to you. Oh, man. It's really quite amazing to see. And the guy who does Kissinger is darn good, too.
That is so funny.
About to answer.
The
milk
producers. It's creepy. I mean...
Yeah, he actually gets him.
His little little laughter.
Well, he's amazing he doesn't just do imitations. He's like he's a mimic in the highest sense of the word.
Yeah.
He brings out the person, when he does someone, it's actually quite.
I gotta check those.
Check it out. Yeah. Check it out. There you go.